when you're working with young individuals is make sure you assess maturity, because it's going to be influential and should be influential in terms of your decision making for maybe talent identification if there's much of that going on within weightlifting. I know it's generally a smaller cohort of athletes, so we don't have as much kind of deselection and recruitment going on, but we need to assess maturity to factor that in when we were interpreting performance. And also it's obviously going to be useful from a developmental standpoint to actually be prioritizing appropriate things to align natural development with an appropriate kind of training stimulus.
All right, Dr. Stephanie Morris, it's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong Show for the second time. My pleasure having you again, and we'll be talking maturation and growing up and also becoming a weightlifter. So if you could briefly introduce yourself, that would be amazing.
Thanks again for the invite, Alex. Good to talk about weightlifting and good to be at the end of the PhD journey. So yeah, a bit about me. So recently just finished the PhD, which the kind of overarching topic was youth weightlifting. And yeah, main role is lecturing in strength and conditioning. So that's kind of how I got into weightlifting, is from the using weightlifting as a training modality, if you like. And then alongside that, obviously get involved in the coaching. So coaching weightlifting with British Weightlifting, and also coaching strength and conditioning in our Youth Athletic Development Centre at Cardiff Met.
Okay, so we have to start with some kind of definition what relative age and biological maturity are.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, relative age kind of refers to an individual's like calendar age, if you like, in relation to the cutoff age within sport. So the cutoff age that's normally used to define like chronological age groups. What we find, what we call like relative age effects. So often in sport, there's a bias towards what we call BQ1 athletes. So individuals born in the birth quartile one, or that first quartile relative to the cutoff age. And so that's probably most common in a lot of sports. But likewise, there are some sports where actually there's a bias towards BQ4 athletes, or those kind of relatively younger individuals compared to that cutoff age, but that's less common, and that would be in sports such as like gymnastics, diving, where actually kind of smaller might actually be advantageous. I guess important to note that sometimes there's some confusion between relative age and maturity, but they need to be recognized as kind of separate constructs, if you like. So just because you have a relatively older athlete doesn't mean that they'll actually be more mature. So biological maturity refers to that progress in terms of maturation or progressing to a fully mature state. So different to relative age, which relative age is kind of that calendar date affected by their date of birth, whereas maturity refers to kind of the state in terms of that biological maturation.
Please tell us, how did you design the study?
It kind of came about looking at common biases in talent identification and like youth sport in general. And what we know is that in youth sport, generally individuals are grouped by chronological age, and that means that we do get these biases. So we get relative age effects, and we get generally a bias towards early maturing individuals. So particularly in boys, we know that early maturers generally are kind of stronger, heavier, potentially more confident than their peers, and that leads to athletic advantages. And what we knew was that these biases were common in a lot of other sports. So there's been a lot done in football, for example, on relative age effects and maturity biases, but there really hadn't been much done in weightlifting. There were a couple of studies that looked at relative age effects, but actually maturity is arguably a little bit more important and definitely more influential as well. So we just wanted to fill a bit of a gap there and explore maturity, and also look at the influence as well. So we know that as individuals mature, we get big changes in strength and power and whatnot. Actually, there wasn't any research that looked at the relationship between maturity and weightlifting performance.
All right. So you decided, right, we have to have a look at young weightlifters. So who did you invite to the study?
Yeah. So it was, I went along to the English age groups. And that was kind of through links with British Weightlifting. So they've been really receptive to all of it. And it was kind of like, okay, can I come along to one of your events? And we chose the English age groups, or kind of championships, because the idea was we wanted that like high level of performance. And so we wanted to explore, actually, was there a bias, and were we almost like selecting or cutting off some of those individuals that weren't then reaching those like kind of higher participation levels. So went along to the English age group championships, and we managed to recruit it was 49 young weightlifters, and that was across all of the age group categories competing. So under 10s, under 12s, under 15s and under 17s. And we had a spread across those age groups. And also it was almost a 50-50 split between boys and girls within that cohort as well.
Awesome. What did you measure?
So what we did was, so when we look at assessing biological maturity, what we often, or what we have are kind of three systems that we can measure maturity across, if you like. So we have sexual maturity, skeletal maturity, and somatic maturity. And often sexual maturity isn't used as much in practice. So to measure sexual maturity, a common method is using Tanner stages, where you kind of use criteria and look at kind of like pubic hair development and kind of categorize them. Obviously quite invasive for a practitioner to do it. And then there are self-reported measures, but they're less reliable. So commonly, sexual maturity isn't used that often. We've then got skeletal maturity, and often that's seen as like the gold standard way of assessing biological maturity, but that involves x-rays. And so obviously quite costly, also not that accessible. But what they've recently introduced is ultrasound equipment. And we used a kind of equipment called Sonic Bone, which uses a similar method to the x-rays and actually uses the Tanner and Whitehouse 2 method to categorize. And that gives us an estimation of skeletal maturity using ultrasound rather than the x-rays. So we don't have the kind of exposure that we'd get with the x-rays. And also it's a lot more accessible. So that was actually the method that we used. So I took along the Sonic Bone. So it's a piece of equipment, not big at all, and took measurements. So what we do with that equipment is we take three measurements on different sites on the left hand and wrist area. And what it does is it uses those measurements. So kind of takes like the speed of sound and attenuation, and then gives us a estimated skeletal age based off that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of fairly new, and we've only just started using that piece of equipment over the last couple of years. And I think it's important to note that like that would probably be seen as like a more rigorous approach in research to estimate kind of maturity. But likewise, and one of the review papers that we've actually published since kind of gives guidance on that, the other method that I discussed of using somatic measurements to determine kind of somatic maturity. So that's obviously easily accessible to coaches by just taking height and weight. And we get, you know, it's reliable enough, not as kind of accurate as the Sonic Bone, but we kind of, it's a lot more accessible in practice. Yeah. So yeah, we also took height and weight, which we input that information to help with the equations as well. And then the individuals reported their competition performance. So we reported obviously their maximum across clean and jerk and snatch, their total. And then we also then converted those into relative measures as well, just to explore the influence of maturity across absolute, but also relative measures of weightlifting performance.
How do you get from height and weight to the maturity status or growth status of a person?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, the Sonic Bone kind of uses those as part of the equation. But what we kind of typically recommend and how we use somatic measures to get maturity status is using the commonly two equations that are most commonly used. And we recommend the Camis and Roach method, which takes standing height and also parental height as well. So we didn't actually use that in this study, but generally there's better reliability, and it uses equations to look at what's the individual's predicted adult height. And then from the measurement of their standard height and weight, we can add in seated height as well, but it doesn't make a massive difference. And then from that, we can determine what's their current percentage of predicted adult height. And then from that, we can align those percentages to a kind of maturity status.
Awesome. Yeah, do you want to say what kind of analysis did you do?
In order to look at the kind of whether there was a bias towards maturity or whether there were relative age effects, we ran chi-square analysis. And that basically shows us if there is a difference to what we'd expect. So looked at what's kind of normal distribution. So how many would we normally expect in birth quartile one, birth quartile two, three, four, how many would we normally expect as early on time or late maturers? And then the chi-square analysis looks at what we'd expect compared to what we actually found. And then the second analysis was then looking at some regression. So we actually conducted, rather than linear regression, we did power regression. So quite often we do linear regression when we're looking at predictions, but actually we know that maturity isn't a linear process. So what we found was that the power regression analysis was kind of a better fit and provided a better relationship between those variables. So we did a power regression analysis looking at weightlifting performance and then skeletal age.
Awesome. Are we ready for the results?
Yeah.
Go there.
What we found in terms of birth quartile, it wasn't different to what we'd expect. So in this cohort, there were no relative age effects. And that was across all of the sample, but also within the individual age groups. And then probably the most interesting was the maturity bias. So what we found across the group collectively in both boys and girls individually, there was an overrepresentation of early maturers and also more than what we'd expect of on-time maturers. And it was particularly the under 15 age group when we looked at those across the individual age groups. It was the under 15 age group that saw that overrepresentation of early maturers. And then the kind of second analysis looking at the relationships, what we found was that really strong relationships between skeletal age and weightlifting performance, kind of as we'd expect. So it was in the boys, skeletal age was able to explain it was 73% of variance, and then in the girls 75% of variance. And then we actually looked at whether there was a difference between the relationship between weightlifting and skeletal age in boys and girls, and there was a difference, and that difference tended to emerge around that like 12 to 13 years. So again, just kind of add into the notion of the importance of assessing maturity. And then also differences in males and females, and they are typically going to emerge around that adolescent growth spurt, kind of as we'd expect.
What coaches should take away from this study?
I guess the importance initially is when you're working with young individuals is make sure you assess maturity, because it's going to be influential and should be influential in terms of your decision making for maybe talent identification if there's much of that going on within weightlifting. I know it's generally a smaller cohort of athletes, so we don't have as much kind of deselection and recruitment going on. But we need to assess maturity to factor that in when we were interpreting performance. And also it's obviously going to be useful from a developmental standpoint to actually be prioritizing appropriate things to align natural development with an appropriate kind of training stimulus.
Would you have any examples for that?
Yeah, so a kind of key example might be post peak height velocity, particularly in boys. We might see increases in circulating hormones, which mean that we get large increases in strength and the ability to kind of increase muscle mass. So adding additional load at this point in the weightlifting movements, as long as we've got sound technical proficiency, we'll take advantage and we'll almost see kind of like a synergistic adaptation at this point, potentially around that growth spurt. So circa peak height velocity. Often we might see this period of like adolescent awkwardness. So we might see like breakdowns in movement, snatch in particular, for example, that's maybe deemed a little bit more technical, might become a little bit clunky. It might perfect lift one day, next day the athlete's all over the place. So at that stage, we might want to kind of pull back on some of the technical elements and maybe use the derivatives or parts of the movement a little bit more commonly than the full movements. And we might want to supplement normal training with maybe some mobility to cater for reductions in mobility that we might see at that phase, or potentially an emphasis on like full range of movement in some of those strength exercises. And then the other one would be typically pre-peak height velocity, so before that growth spurt. Generally, we see an increase in neuroplasticity. So individuals can potentially pick up movements and learn movement patterns quite easily. And so introducing weightlifting ideally at that stage to learn the movements to then kind of progress and add load once they've got that technical proficiency, and kind of potentially adding in some other neuromuscular training at that stage to take advantage of what's naturally occurring. So plyometrics at that stage, a bit more of like a combined training approach.
Anything coaches should be aware in terms of differences between how to train boys versus girls?
Yeah. So I guess one of the things that we might want to consider is girls, particularly at that post-peak height velocity stage, because of their seeing natural increases in fat mass, more so compared to boys, their relative strength might actually kind of stay the same. So being mindful of that. And at that stage, we're going to try and avoid male and female comparisons as much as possible, but also avoiding peer-to-peer comparisons, particularly in young females as well. So some of the research from a like psychological perspective shows that post-peak height velocity, young girls are particularly like critical and comparing themselves to peers. So from a confidence perspective, an emphasis on like individual growth and kind of goal, individual growth, like goal setting and progress might be particularly important in the girls, but also in the boys, arguably as well, avoiding that kind of peer comparison. Yeah. And I guess probably so that focuses on almost like maturity status, but also considering maturity timing as well would be important. So whether your individual is an early on time or late maturer, because that then might have implications from a training perspective as well. So again, kind of sticking on the psychology, what we know is that early maturing females might see lower levels of self-confidence compared to the males that actually might see higher levels of self-confidence. So being mindful of that, and again, avoiding peer comparisons kind of throughout that growth spurt and adolescent phase. And obviously weightlifting is a sport where the comparisons are really easy. We've literally got weightlifted. But I think one of the guidance that we pulled together was adding in maybe like handicap scoring systems for in-house competitions where athletes are compared to their personal best, rather than always kind of comparing to others within those their kind of categories or genders.
Okay, we have some options.
Yeah.
Better, and to not discourage or write off the athletes who are maturing later. That's important.
Yeah, and I guess we kind of touched on it earlier about how the under 15 age category doesn't have that technical element. So it's whether, particularly in in-house competitions, we could bring that technical assessment and the influence that has on their overall score back in a little bit more. Obviously, generally, athletes with better technical competency will lift more, but it doesn't always work like that. And you may see the athletes that have poor technical competency, but because they have kind of better strength or power, they can get away with it a little bit more. So maybe adding in some technical scoring as well might complement that.
Measuring maturity, adjusting competitions so they are a little bit fair through keeping this technical element up to 15 years of age, where these differences are biasing the outcome potentially, if they did in this study, and using this information to program and to guide and develop athletes according to their actual biological maturation stage, not necessary to the date they were born.
Yeah.
Two questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift?
I'm going to go really controversial as a, in theory, weightlifter, but at the moment, it's got to be a split squat.
What? What? Sorry.
I just think, I hurt my ankle. I sprained my ankle before Christmas, and squatting just, it's not enjoyable at the moment. Doesn't look as good. And you can't beat a split squat just to keep that strength development up and not compromise on my form with my bad ankle.
Got it. Got it. I respect that. All right. Where people can find you if they want to follow your research, ask a question, or just see what you're up to? Where should they go?
Yeah, I'm rubbish on social media and I apologize now. I'm always really good on email. I'm one of those losers. So any questions, by all means, I welcome an email. But I do have social media, so I can be found on Twitter. I'm also pretty good on ResearchGate as well. If anybody wants any of the research kind of sharing or whatnot, probably best to drop a message in my inbox on ResearchGate. X is at StephMorris979. But yeah, maybe if people message me on there, I might become a little bit better.
Excellent. Incentive. All right, Steph, thank you so much. Pleasure to meet you again, and all the best.
Yeah, thank you, Alex.